Yeah, good morning, all. Thanks for joining the combined Audit, Finance, Human Resources Committee meeting for CHIFA. In accordance with Governor Lamont's executive order regarding public meetings held via teleconference, this meeting will be recorded and posted to the CHIFA website. All board members, staff, consultants, and professionals must state their name and title before speaking. So on that note, I will go ahead and take roll call. I'll start with the Audit and Finance Committee members. Mark Varhaluk.
I am here.
Sorry, thank you. Lawrence Davis.
Present.
Daryl Hill. Peter Lisi.
Present.
We'll move to the HR members. Michael Angelini is present. Kimberly Kennison. And Peter, I've got you on here again, so I won't ask you for your other board members. Are there any other board members that have joined us? I don't think so. So now I'll jump over to staff. Jeanette Weldon.
I'm here.
Denise Aguilera.
Here.
Deb Golly.
Here.
Jan Junji. Eileen McDonald. Joanne Mackowitz.
I'm present.
Michael Morris.
I'm here.
Cynthia Peoples.
I'm here.
And Kara Stewart.
Here.
Is there anyone, staff, board members, or guests that I missed? Great. All right. So I'm doing okay so far, Mark. Except I may have butchered your last name, as usual.
You're doing way better. You're doing a great job.
So with that, let's move into the agenda. You should have received the packet as part of the meeting invitation. The first item on the agenda is the combined, the combined committee meeting minutes of April 24th, 2019. I think we had some amendments that were included in your package. And I think the amendments were just essentially changing the date on those minutes. So with that, do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Peter. Any comments or additional changes to the amendment? Great. With that, we'll go ahead and I'll ask for a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed or abstentions? Great. Thank you. Kim Kennison, thanks for joining. I see you're on the line with us now.
Yes.
We're just on agenda item number two, the combined committee meeting minutes of April 15th, 2020. Do I have a motion?
Abstain.
Of course. Do I have a motion for approval of those minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Peter. Any comments or additional edits, changes to those minutes? Great, none. So with that, we'll ask for a vote. All those in favor of the minutes, aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions other than Kim's? Great. Thank you. So the minutes are approved. So the last agenda item, or the bulk of the meeting, will be to review the 2022 proposed human resources budget. Just a quick couple of comments before I hand it over to Cynthia to lead us through. Obviously, we do this every year as kind of a two-step process. This committee meets and reviews the HR component of the overall budget at this time, and then the overall budget will be discussed at a subsequent meeting. We do this obviously because the HR compensation benefits makes up such a significant part of the budget. We want to make sure that this is in the right place before we move on to the next step of the budgeting process. So today we will, at the end of this discussion, we will ask this combined committee for an approval of the HR component of the budget. So with that, Cynthia, I'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Mike. All right, so bear with me. I'm going to share my screen for you for my presentation. Okay. Can everyone view the screen at this time?
Yes. Thank you.
Perfect. All right, so let's get started here. One of the first things that I wanted to review were the final outcomes with our engagement with Human Resource Consortium. When we presented this information last year, we discussed that there were some final recommendations that impact, you know, salaries and compensation that needed to be put in place. And in addition to that, as an outcome of the staff survey, we engaged with HRC to do some communications training for both management and staff. And that was a successful venture that happened from August through October with them and their team at HRC. So the three things that we still had outstanding as recommendations from HRC included the salary administration strategy and guidelines, which we have implemented. We have also, the second thing was to formalize our salary structure, which we have done. And the third thing was to align that pay to performance. So with our new performance evaluation process, in addition to these guidelines, we were also able to align our pay to performance, and that is part of the outcome and input into where we ended up with our compensation budgeting for this year. I don't know if anyone has any questions about those final outcomes.
No.
Okay. So continuing, as we've done in past years, we take a look at what's happening in the market. In particular, on this slide, we look at resource organizations, and then we bring it local, which I'll have on an upcoming slide. So we can also incorporate this information into our compensation assumptions here as well. The feedback I have on this page is primarily from the first quarter of this year. Any surveys related, you know, related to compensation that were put out by World at Work and Willis Towers Watson and the like. This is the feedback that I received. So from Conference Board, from Financial Services in particular, they had a 2.5 to 3% increase, although they indicated again in this first quarter of the year that salary budgets are lowering. And then at World at Work as well, approximately 20% of employers were considering making changes to their salary budgets from what they reported at the end of last year. And it went from 2.9 to 2.8% as far as increases to their budgets. Economic Research Institute also did a survey. So at the beginning of April, they published information talking about the median being about 2.3, projected increase about 2.2. Willis Towers Watson, again, they did a survey as well, and they indicated that one in three companies were lowering their projected salaries, and they averaged about 2.7. So continuing across, this is relatively the same information. Salary.com was probably the only one that had optimism about the economic recovery. And most of these, as you know, research in the first quarter of this year was all prior to, you know, any indication of the reopening of the economy. So now what we're seeing is far more, you know, optimistic about the economy and about growth, you know, in the job market as well. So while this was a part of and did help drive what we were looking at, obviously there have been some changes in our salary environment in recent months. So looking at the government local insight that we had as well, I take a look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics as well. Their information, of course, is from 2020. You know, indicating that salaries rose about 2.7%. And if you look locally at the Hartford area counties, Hartford, Talon, and Middlesex, all occupations increased about 1.17, and financial manager salaries increased about 1.26. There is a bill in front of the Senate now regarding the fair adjustment of income rates for federal employees looking to increase their salary 3.5% in 2021 and 3.2% in 2022. They state that federal employees lag the private sector by about 23%. And they're hoping to make up for lost wages that they've had over years where they haven't had, you know, the ability to make much of an increase. CPI and cost of living adjustments, so CPI and COLA, those tend to be the basis for some other increases, so I wanted to include that information here. The seasonally adjusted March 2021 number is at 2.6%, and which they stated at the time was the largest over the year increase since August of 2018 at 2.7, and then the before seasonally adjustment number for April 2021 is out, and it's at 4.2. And this, of course, is the largest increase, 12-month increase, since a 4.9 increase in September 2008. COLA is 1.3 for Social Security benefits. And then, of course, we look at the state of Connecticut. So obviously, there's been an addition of the Connecticut Paid Family and Medical Leave Act tax of 0.5%, which essentially is a reduction in your, in your income. And then there have been some select increases at OPM, as well as I take a look at quasi-publics to see what's been, what they're planning. And I spoke to a couple, and so it's limited indicators from them. But I did get from one that it's going to be about a 3.5 to 4% pool that they're looking at to budget for their increases. And then another was indicating that it would probably be CPI plus about 3% merit that they were looking at to use for their salary increase budget. In addition to that, I just leave a note in there about the airport authority, and I believe Jeanette had mentioned there's another authority as well, where they're seeking to opt out of the state's retirement system so that they can reduce their operating costs from a strategic standpoint, because they need more revenues to, for operations. Final statement here for information, I seasonally adjusted. Just want to make it a comment, or is that my own echo? Okay, might have been my own echo, sorry. Seasonally adjusted numbers for March for unemployment for Connecticut versus the United States unemployment rate for March 2020, it was 3.8 versus 4.4, so 3.8 for Connecticut versus 4.4 for the United States. And then this March, obviously, as a pandemic effect, the state of Connecticut is at 8.3, as well as the United States being at a 6.0% increase. So this graphic is really just a visual of that information that I presented on the last two slides, taking a look at where they all stand as far as their increases are concerned in the yellow bars. Obviously, I put the indices in for in the gray bars for what's happening, for CPI and COLA. And then for the quasi public feedback, I just put in that minimum amount of 3.5%. Not the full range of what I was provided as indications. And then for CHIFA, ultimately, based on all of this information, our merit increase portion would be 2.53%. And coincidentally, I did a quick average of the gold bars there, and this is actually an average of all those increases equals 2.56%.
Cynthia, this is Peter. So can you explain to me one more time what's reflected in the CPI number of 2.6? Is that the past 12 months? Is that a roll in 12? What is the 2.6? What time frame is the 2.6 measuring?
It is the last 12 months in the 2.6.
So it would be April 20th or April 2020 through April 2021? Is that the basically catches the COVID?
This is the March number. This is a seasonally adjusted March number, ending March 30th of 2021. 12 months, yes.
Okay.
All right. So as a result, the compensation budget that you found in the memo, what I wanted to do was first kind of address where we were with the fiscal 2021 budget versus actual, and then I'll go into a little bit more of this that we had in the memo, and this information on the slide is direct from the memo. But for the fiscal 2021 budget, we had $2,187,409 budgeted for compensation. And if you recall, it would be a half rate, half a year at one salary rate, and then a half a year at our second salary rate after we had our increases that were postponed. And so between that and our fiscal 2021 actual, which is $2,139,994 in the memo, that really is a result of timing and then the number of actual pay dates to date. Through the end of the year, each month to month, Joanne does not do an accrual of payroll until June 30 for the end of the year. So when the last couple of weeks of the year are paid out in July, she'll do an accrual and that number will come up to more in line with where we are for the budget for 2021. But at the moment, that's the difference in those numbers at this time. So for our compensation budget for 2022, we do start with our current salaries. So budget and actual from fiscal 21 really don't play a role in how we do our budgeting for compensation. And we have a few factors going on that I've broken out here. So we're starting with 2206,758 as our current salary base. We have, staffing changes, a merit increase pool, and then we have two discretionary numbers in there, one for labor grade adjustments and the other for discretionary award pool. And for the staffing changes, we do have one retirement. There's an employee who's been with us for 26 years, Eileen McDonald, who is retiring on June 30th. So her position would need to be filled, as well as a proposal for a new FTE position, which I'll discuss very, very shortly. And then, so that merit increase pool that we talked about being 2.53% equates to $55,786. And that is using all of the factors that we put in place to how we determine our salaries, our compensation, and all that based on our engagement with HRC. Does anyone have any questions about that increase? I'm going to take a drink here. It's $109,181 estimated. For a total compensation budget of $2,315,940.
Cynthia, this is Mark Verholek. Just a quick question. The labor grade adjustments and the one-time awards, those have existed in the past, correct? That's yes. Not new.
Yes, they have.
And it's just that your $2,206,000 is just, it's not necessarily your current salary adjusted budget. It's purely just current salaries. It doesn't have, and that's why you're adding that back in.
Yeah, that is purely current salaries, yes.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
When you say current salary, I guess I consider kind of the base salary. Is that, the $2,206,000 is base, and then if there's labor grade adjustments or the one-time awards, that's on top of it, right?
That would come from the budgeted numbers that we have there, the pool of discretionary funds that we have in order to do those things as we feel necessary. So we do start with the base salaries for the $2,206,758 is base salaries.
And good morning, everyone. Daryl Hill, apologize for being a few minutes late, was on the governor's unified command call. Thank you for those responses, Cynthia. Just to clarify, the $2,206,000 number does not include any labor grade adjustments or one-time awards from the prior year. It's for the prior year.
So there were not any labor grade adjustments in the prior year. And it would not include one-time awards because they do not increase compensation base.
Okay, and for the labor grade adjustments or one-time awards, were there any paid? I think this $2,206,000 number is for the current fiscal year. Have there been any of either line item paid this year?
No, I believe at the beginning of the year, we do have in the budget on the exhibit, exhibit two. I think it might be labeled one, but exhibit two is the last page of the packet. We project, we're projecting a discretionary award in that budget for this year. And the temporary salaries that's listed there, that's really going to be hopefully the training overlap between the one retiring employee and the start of the new employee. So if you take a look at that last page in the exhibit attached to the memo, you'll see where we have paid out some discretionary awards over the last, what we have in there is 2 years and then the current year anticipated. But that's okay. In this fiscal year.
And with regard to the merit increases, which we understand are performance-based, the treasurer does not support non-union increases if they're not applied to non-union employees statewide. It's just a fairness equity issue that, albeit a quasi state agency or authority entity, that some folks shouldn't be getting raises when other folks aren't, programmatic.
And I think, Daryl, if I can just jump in, I think that's consistent with positions that Sarah Sanders took when she was the designee to the chief of board. And so, you know, chief has a long history of trying to manage their salaries, you know, in, you know, acknowledging the current operating environment, whether it's the states or, you know, in general, and trying to, you know, sort of balance those two things. But, yes, that's a position that historically the treasurer's office has taken with chief.
All right. Any other questions on the increases here? And just so you know, I didn't mention it earlier, the performance evaluation process that we did put in place as one of the outcomes of our engagement with HRC, we now do the performance evaluations in advance of budgeting. So these numbers would be based on actual performance evaluation ratings for this year.
Jeanette,
I have a question. Sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead, Kim.
Thank you. So knowing that the Treasury took that stance, what was the history as far as OPM and their stance? Because we would be in the same boat from OPM.
What is the question?
The same question that Daryl had, but you were speaking of Treasury. I have the same question from the OPM stand. What was the history that they took?
Right. My recollection of past years with regard to OPM votes is that OPM has in fact voted in support of the budget proposal, is my recollection. If anyone, Denise or Cynthia, if you recall anything differently, let me know. But I think historically it has been the treasurer's office abstaining, but OPM voting. So Denise or Cynthia, do you recall anything other than that?
I don't recall that that's always been consistently throughout. No, I don't. Denise, I don't know that you do.
I don't recall. I'll take a quick look at the minutes and see if I can get you the information.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to suggest that, Denise. I mean, I think it's an important enough question that we should be sure of what we're providing back to Kim.
Yeah, my other question would be is at this very moment, I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage because you're probably looking to take a vote on this, is I don't know the number and I don't know if I can, you know, put myself on pause and find out what the number is that, Daryl, I think what you're referring to is those manager employees, as you're stating, non-union that haven't received increases. And I believe that the secretary has budget money put in there so that this year for 22, that there is an increase scheduled, but I don't know what that number is at this very moment. And so I apologize that I'm not prepared, because then I could recommend if it was in sync with that request.
Sure. And well, thank you for that, Kim. It's good to hear that not only managerial, but non-union unclassified appointed positions.
Yes.
It's our understanding that increases for those employees, many of which have not received any increase for years.
Right.
I know I have some direct reports that haven't received an increase in 7 years. So again, it's a principal issue for the treasurer. And, you know, for me, the words always matter, right? Not to, to pick on Jeanette and her comment about the past that the treasurer's office has abstained. Treasurer Wooden is not a fan of abstaining. You either support it or you don't. Would vote no, again, on principle, because of the merit increase. Mm-hmm. And the no vote would be reflective of that principled matter.
Right. I think it's also important to note that even with the information I received from other quasi-publics, again, they're often looking at COLA increases plus merit or CPI plus a merit. And in this case, CHIFA does not and has not historically provided any other type of increase other than merit. So we don't say, okay, COLA is 1%, we're stacking ours on top of that. Or CPI is this, we're stacking it on top of that. We traditionally have only provided merit increases. So in this case, if CPI goes up 2.6% and, you know, our percentages are 0.5, then that's essentially what you're going to get, whether the market's outpacing you or not.
Sure, I appreciate that. And, you know, for clarity, the lack of increases for non-union employees across the state includes or excludes any of that alphabet soup related to CPI, COLA. There have been no adjustments. Salaries have remained static for years.
Correct.
So can I just ask, this is Mark Rillette. Can I ask a quick follow-up question? And this is to you, Daryl, and maybe Kim as well. I have past experience, you know, dealing with, well, I shouldn't say past experience, but I've been on the board to hear the positions of treasurer and OPM. And it's not at all different from what you're saying. My question though, and maybe I misheard, was that yes, there's a history of no increases for many years, but then I thought I heard Kim say that there is a provision in current budget for increases for next fiscal year. Is that true, or did I misunderstand that?
I'll defer to Kim. I think what she was referring to is the governor's proposed budget for next fiscal year.
That is what I'm referring to.
Okay.
That is what I'm referring to, but I do know that the secretary, the current secretary McCaw, had put in an increase during this time, but for these same folks, but this was like a couple of years ago. It might have been her first year here, and that it's scheduled again. In fact, the secretary is recognizing that there is an issue with this for management and non-union, and that we have that group, I'm going to say we, because Daryl and I are in that we have not kept up with the pace as we have, and our CREATES report that came out has recognized those issues, and you'll get union workers that have actually started to grow through the years that will make more money than those that are managing. So there is a reason, and she does take that. But again, the governor's budget is not approved, and we don't know where we stand with that, even if the proposal is there.
Got it. Thank you.
I just tried to quickly get off and see if I can find out what that number is from the her budget.
I'll say it's not enough, but it's nice to have a number at least proposed, and I'm hopeful and optimistic, not for myself, but for our non-union employees statewide, that the General Assembly approves that line.
Mike,
this is Denise. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Denise.
I'm sorry, Mike. I was able to check the minutes from the last 2 years. The minutes from the 2020 committee meeting regarding the 21 budget, the treasurer's designee voted in favor of staff recommendations, and OPM designee was not present for the meeting, so that wasn't represented in the minutes. And for the 2019 committee meeting regarding the 20 2020 budget. OPM voted in favor of staff recommendation, and treasurer designee was not present at the meeting.
Yes, and full disclosure, I think that 2020 meeting, I think it was my first meeting. I've learned a lot since then.
Well, thank you, Denise, thank you for that. And I think, you know, Daryl, to your point, I think, you know, obviously what Chief is trying to accomplish, I think, with the compensation component of the budget is, you know, just that, just your point, which is, you know, maintaining salaries and compensation that is competitive with the marketplace and the talent that we're seeking to staff Chiefa with. And so in doing it within, you know, within the confines of a balanced budget, or a budget that, that, you know, provides for a slight excess for reserves in the future. But certainly appreciate the points. Denise, again, thanks for the history. Appreciate that.
Mike, just Daryl, just to let you know, Sherry was the treasurer's representative at the 2020 meeting last year.
Great.
Okay. Sherry Mayhot, rather.
Mayhot, yes. Thanks. Yep.
2020 or 2021? Because we're doing 22.
It was the 2021 budget, but the meeting was held in 2020.
Okay.
Any other questions on the proposal? Cynthia, any additional comments?
Not at this time.
Great.
All right, so I will continue. So in addition to this, obviously we are requesting, actually I'll go over this real quick. This is just an overview of what our budget to actual looks like for fiscal year since 2018, where we budgeted one number, and then obviously our actual comes in at a different number, and we went over what the difference was between 2021. We expect that number to be in line or just above the 2202 at 2208 once the year accruals have been made for 2021. The next slide goes over the new position that we are proposing. So this position in particular would report to myself in support of the functional areas in operations and finance, which include finance, accounting, human resources, and information systems. It's essentially someone who can, you know, support with reporting, some reconciliations, data gathering, you know, related documentation, that type of thing, that essentially would report with an oversight of myself and in some cases Joanne as well. The need essentially is the addition of the three subsidiaries since 2012. So what I'll do is I'll step back and tell you that about 10 or 12 years ago, we actually had four accountants that were reporting directly to Joanne. As one left about 12 or 13 years ago, I guess it was, we did not replace that person. And then in about 2013, we had another leave and we did not replace that person. And at that time we have, you know, now we have two accountants. But we've added three subsidiaries, as you all know. So the reporting related to all those positions, the demands for that has grown over the years. You know, there are some areas that have been expanded by best practices and audit recommendations, in particular with the vendor administration, looking at contracts, looking at the stock reports. Some of the documentation that we maintain in human resources, as well as the communications that we need to do, as far as your equity and engagement and inclusion and all that is concerned. Assisting with maintaining policies and procedures. I mean, there's so many functional areas and so many tasks, including all those that we're taking on, you know, with the IT engagement that's starting related to information security programs and things of that nature. Also assisting assisting with business continuity. There's documentation that needs to be maintained and kept up to date on a regular basis. In support of that plan as well. And then with some of our strategic projects and initiatives, which includes, of course, this IT type of consultation that we'll have, you know, when we're bringing in our new client portal, when we've brought in, you know, new systems and require data conversion and things like that. So that's what we're hoping will be in this person. It's a full-time position. We're hoping to staff by July 1st. And our desired outcomes would be, you know, so that Joanne and I have more time, and even the other accountants have more time dedicated to review and analysis, and also so we can adhere more to our reporting deadlines and those best practices timeframes, where things just get loaded on our desks and there's not a time, you know, not enough time to get them all done. So that's essentially the premise for this new position. I don't know if anyone has any questions about that or concerns.
I do have some questions.
This
is Kim. So this is a shared position between HR and finance. Is that what I'm hearing?
The position will report to me, but in support of functional areas that report to me, essentially.
So I apologize. Is that HR or is that finance?
It's finance, accounting, HR, and information systems that all report to me.
Okay, very good. All right.
It is not a transactional accountant.
Okay, because both would be so different, right? And it is a support position. What's the position called?
We haven't actually settled on an actual title. I keep calling it an assistant analyst. So that's essentially where we've landed at this point, but I don't have a formal title for the position just yet. It's akin to a reporting analyst, but again, there's administrative roles associated with it as well.
And I don't see, what's the base starting or the salary range of such a position that you're asking for?
I did not report that information, but normally it would be in the 50 to 60 range.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. All right. So I'm going to move on to the benefit part of the budget. And so essentially the largest increase comes from our medical insurance, and I'm going to go into that in a little bit more detail after I go through these highlights of these key metrics here on this slide. In particular, with medical insurance premiums, our increases occur in January, for January 1st, and based on the advice given by our benefit consultant at Brown & Brown, we are budgeting for a 10% increase. And also an increase in our insurance plan deductibles. So that ultimately results in a premium increase of about 32% over the fiscal 2021 projected actual. And that's due to staff aging up, other staff assumptions of new position, replacement positions, and any coverage additions. So if people have added people onto the plan or in some cases if children age out and that type of thing. And the HSA funding increases have increased to 68% of the projected actual based on deductible assumptions. And I'm going to go into that on the next slide in a lot more detail. So with disability and life insurance premiums, the increase for budgeting is 5%. And that's an increase of 3.4% over our current 2021 budget and 7% over the projected actual. And again, a lot of this is based on usage. Related to that, we did have a 0% increase on January 1 for the premiums associated with our disability and our life insurance plans. For dental insurance, again, it's a 5% budgeted increase based on advice from our consultant. And the impact of that increase actually decreased from our 3.6 from our fiscal year 2021 budget. However, it increased 18.8% over our projected actual. And again, these are usage assumptions. We had a 0% premium increase on January 2021. And it's important to note when it says 18.8% over the projected actual is 24,000 and the 2022 budget is 28,500. So it's not the significant numbers we're speaking to. For workers' compensation, our classifications changed, obviously, as we moved to working from home. So those numbers decreased 51% from the 2021 budget, and it also decreased 6.2% from the projected actual. And that again is related to the employee classifications. And then finally on this page for the Connecticut Family and Medical Leave Act, we are proposing to use a private plan with our current short-term and our disability and long-term disability provider. And the reasons for that would be that it would be a single intake to set up our claims, coordinates with our short-term disability we already have in place. And the plan would obviously provide notifications reporting for management related to any claims that are made and in tracking and any entitlements associated with that. And that's just a straight increase in our budget of $1,811. Do you have any questions about those four on the right? And then I'll go into a little bit more detail on the medical insurance. All right, final note on the Connecticut paid family leave. In order for us to take on the private plan, it does require us to have all our employees vote and for 51% of those employees to vote in affirmative for us to take on this plan. At this point, we're anticipating a vote on June 1st with staff. All right, so here's an overview of our medical insurance benefit budget assumptions, essentially. So where we are is that, first, if I step back and take a look at, where we are with our budget for 2021 and with our projected actual in this case. Again, the majority of the changes that we have that have an impact on our insurance obviously are premium related based on budget as well as the activity of our employees. It's important to note here that it's not how Joanne does this budget actually is to take a look at each and every individual that we have in our coverage. So if my policy costs, $5,000 and it's a 10% increase, it's not just a multiplier of that 10% on my $5,000. Joanne's actually taking a look at me, the fact that I'm aging up, I have a spouse on the plan who also ages up, I have children on the plan that also age up, and in some cases other people have children on the plan, that age out. So we're looking at it really on an actual enrollment experience and then the assumptions that are associated with that. So the new rates would be effective for January 1 of 2022. Stepping back to take a look at fiscal year 2021 budget versus actual, we budgeted a 15% increase in our premiums for 2021, and we actually had a 7.8% increase in our premiums. So that and the movements, the status changes and that type of thing all have an impact on where we started with the $235,000 budget and landed at the 2013 $154, and most of that of course is wrapped in the fact that increases were half as much as we anticipated. So in this particular case, our projected actual for 2/6/30/2021 is at $213,154. And if you break it down into pieces of how we get to our budget for 2022, we have incremental age changes that equate to about $4,400. We have, new employees added, net of our retiree, that's about $25,700. Net family status changes, again, that's if a family comes onto the plan, if their children age out, they have new children, that type of thing, that comes to about $11,441. And then we tack on that 10% premium increase, which equates to about $27,000. So the total increase there is $68,541, which lands us at the budgeted number of $281,695 for 2022. Do you have any more questions about that information? And that's the case with our dental insurance and the like. So these aren't just a, it's going to cost us $10,000 for this. We say 10%, so now it's, that's not really how we do the budgeting on that. It's far more granular and in more detail. One of the other larger items that is in the budget for the medical insurance is the fact that we fund HSA accounts at 75%. So for fiscal 2021, we budgeted plan deductibles for a single at $3,500 and a family at $8,000. So if we're paying 75% of that, to fund the HSA account, and then we multiply, the number of singles we have and the number of families that we have, the total budget for 2021 was $61,000. And then our projected actual, we were actually able to maintain the same plan deductibles that we had in 2021 from 2020 into 2021. So that obviously, once you multiply 75% and the number of singles and the number of families, our projected actual funding HSAs was reduced to $41,511. And then advice on our from our council from our consultants with Brown and Brown regarding the fiscal 2022 budget. Those premiums are going to be at $3,500. Plan deductibles will be at $3,500 and $7,500, which again comes to a number close to $70,000 when you multiply by the number of single and family members that are on the plan. And so that leans the budget there and also has a variance in the medical expense coverage that we have. I don't have any questions about that at all.
So I have one question. And you could have said this, but I might not have heard it. You know how they say you hear one third of a conversation when you're, you know, in a classroom. So did you, are you including a premium increase for 22? I think I heard a premium increase that it is at 15%. And I'm assuming that that is the contribution from your employees. And if I have that accurate, what is the, what were you, are you proposing for 22?
The 22 budget has, last year, the 21 budget had an increase of 15% that materialized at about 7.8% for 2021. The budget for 2022 is an increase of 10%.
Okay, so right at, in 21, employees contributed 7.8% of their contribution, yeah. And in 22, you're suggesting what?
No, this isn't employer contributions. Our employer contributions are not changing at this time. I mean, employee contributions are not changing at this time. What I'm speaking to essentially is the premium increase we received when we renewed our insurance.
So can you tell me what then, if I don't have it right, what is the contribution in 21, and which is carrying forward for 22?
For our insurance, a single family would contribute 15% of their premium, a single okay. individual, and a family would contribute 25% toward their premium.
Okay.
That is in the memo. I didn't state that right now in our presentation.
Yep. Okay, that
hasn't changed. That's been in place for quite a number of years. We haven't made a change on that contribution.
All right.
Any other questions on medical insurance?
Nope. Cynthia, we probably, if you think you can run through the rest in about 2 or 3 minutes, I think that would be great. Then we can.
I got one more slide.
Great. Thank you.
I just have one more slide. That's essentially a visual of what we're looking at for benefits. So essentially, you know, looking at benefit as a percent of compensation, I maintain the slide here from 2018 forward to what we're budgeting in 2022. And essentially, based on our assumption, we're budgeting 34.28%. Last year, we budgeted 33.17%, and it came in at 31.57%. So our budget for 2022 is an increase of 8.6% over the projected actual at this time. So that's all I have for my presentation. Does anyone have any questions about any of the presentation at this point? I'll take any more questions and seek approval to include this HR compensation budget into our full budget, which we'll bring to you next month, in addition to that one additional full-time equivalent. Great.
To the full board is what happens? Excuse me.
So essentially, we take this HR compensation budget when it's approved and we put it into the full budget, and then next month we'll request approval of the full budget.
So just to follow up on that, I guess a question to you, Denise. Then today, this is more of an informational item to the committee and does not require approval by the full board, correct? It just gets incorporated into the overall budget that gets approved by the board at the June meeting, correct?
Right. This is not going to the board now, right? It would just be approval to include for purposes of next month's audit finance committee meeting for their approval, which will then go forward to the board for final approval.
Right, but we will report out on this committee meeting to the full board, but there's right. There's no vote taken, correct?
Right.
We can't hear you, Jeanette.
It wouldn't be for today. The committee is voting in the manner that you just described, Denise, to vote to have it incorporated into the full budget, but there's no vote at the board meeting today. And
right.
Then the board vote will come next month along with a second committee vote, audit finance committee vote.
Right. But when we report this out to the full board, we will report out that this committee voted to incorporate it as recommended.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Great. So thank you for those clarifications. That's important to make sure we've got the process down correctly. I would like to make a motion or receive a motion in a second and then obviously move to discussion. I suspect there'll be some discussion, after which at that point we can take a vote. So unless there are any other questions, I'll pause for a moment. Okay, great. With that, the motion is to approve the FY22 proposed human resources budget as presented by management, which is inclusive of an average 2.53% merit increase. Do I have a motion?
I'll move it, Mike.
Thank you, Peter. Could I have a second?
This is Lawrence, second.
Great. Thank you, Lawrence. So with that, any discussion, any further discussion on the motion?
I do have some further discussion. Sorry, I apologize. This is my first time for attending such a meeting. And it, to me, there is a good amount of materials here and appreciate the presentation. And this might be the way the forum was handled in the past. A numbers person, I like the presentation that was provided. To be able to connect the dots, so if the assumptions were put on the side of the numbers here, it would have been easy. So now I would like to have your presentation, Cynthia, because that would be helpful. I wish I had that ahead of time versus just trying to look through the numbers. I don't want to quickly look at the trends and say, oh, why are we going up 3%, on the benefit side of life. So with that, I wish we had a little bit more time. I wish I had a little bit more time, like a pre-meeting for a meeting. That would have been helpful for Kim Kennison. So that's my thoughts about it. And again, I just feel, in maybe just this very short meeting, I just feel a little crammed. So that's just my takeaway.
Well, Kim, if I could just say, I would ask Cynthia then to send out the presentation to all the committee members, number one. But number two, you're going to have another bite at the apple, so to speak,
right,
at the June
right.
board meeting. So when you receive Cynthia's material presentation and you put it together with the materials that you received for today's meeting, we can address any questions you have at the full board meeting in June.
That'll be helpful. Thank you.
So, Mike, if I may, I just have one more thing I wanted to add to that. Kim, I expressed a similar commentary to Cynthia, because as a budget guy and a numbers guy myself, I tried to tie the text in the memo to the actual financial statements down below. And I had some difficulty doing that. And I think that was commentary last year as well, Cynthia. And so I'm fine with what was presented today. I have the information that I need to move forward. But I would ask that when we, as well as the board, gets the memo for the budget next month, that it's very clear that if your latest estimate, you basically have a roll forward, and it doesn't have to be in crazy detail, but we should be able to understand how we're either going from last year's approved budget to next year's budget, or how we're going from, your latest estimate to next year's budget, because there seem to be a lot of base numbers jumping around that it's very hard to then kind of figure out, okay, well, then how do you arrive at next year's budget? So I'm sorry if that didn't make a whole lot of sense, but I think you know what I'm talking about, because we've discussed this a bit, and I think that would provide some clarity that make it a bit easier to understand the increases are directionally correct and make sense.
Just for what it's worth, Mark, I support what you said 100%. And if you, as a self-described numbers cruncher, struggle with a little bit, just think about how it is for some of the rest of us. So I support your comment and your request to Cynthia 100%. So thank you for making the comment.
Thank you for both of those comments. Any other comments or questions? Okay, great. With that, again, to reiterate one more time, we will be taking a vote on the motion that's on the table. The discussion later at the board today will just be an update on what happened, and then obviously this will be incorporated for full board approval at the meeting in June. So with that, I'd like to move forward with taking a vote on the motion, which is to approve the FY22 proposed human resources budget as presented. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? I think Daryl, did I hear an opposition? Okay. And Kim as well? Great. Okay.
No, I'm going to abstain.
Okay, sorry about that. Any abstentions other than Kim, or in addition to Kim? Okay, great. So thank you for that. I think that is the only other item we had on the list. So with that, I'll ask for a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you all. We'll see you in a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.